Hi, everybody. Welcome to Two Out the First. It is today, February the 6th, 2023. I am Ryan Ballengee. Good to have you here with us. We have plenty to talk about. We had a Monday finish at Pebble that wound up with Justin Rose winning his 11th PGA Tour title. We'll talk a little bit about that. And then the second topic for today is going to be all about the Swilkin Bridge and whatever the heck just happened there in the last few days, from beginning to now. We have a resolution on the patios on both sides of the Swilkin Bridge. Very strange episode, but it'll be very interesting to talk about public reaction to it and all of that. So we've got all that to deal with. If you want to get a hold of me on social media, I'm at the handle Ryan Ballengee on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Happy to find you there and love to keep the conversation going. But let's get into what we've got to talk about today, which is the finale of the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Justin Rose wins. He shot 66 in the final round between Sunday and Monday, had 9 holes to finish today. No one ever really got that close to him after he hit that incredible fairway bunker shot on the 6th hole. It felt like the tournament was his. He had a 2-shot lead going into the day, winds up winning on 18 under total, expanded the lead by a shot from overnight, and picks up his 11th PGA Tour win and first in almost exactly 4 years. He had won at Torrey Pines in 2019 over Adam Scott when he was a 38-year-old man. He is now a 42-year-old man who just picked up his 11th PGA Tour win. Congratulations to him. I've had some interactions with Justin over the years, really enjoyed spending time with him. He's a guy that's kind of easy to root for. I'm almost 40 years old. I'm turning 40 at the end of April. He's 42. I find myself rooting more for the older guys now because I know I'm getting closer to the end than the beginning. And the same thing is true for Justin Rose. And those days are going to be more difficult to find. Not because he's not a good player or anything like that, but he's been dealing with injuries over throughout the fall. You've got young guns that are coming up that just hit the snot out of the ball. And at a certain point, you kind of have a little bit of diminishing returns in how competitive you can be on the PGA Tour. But I don't think Justin Rose is there yet. He was showing signs that he was playing well, that this was maybe coming. Maybe not a win, but a great finish, and now he's there. Now, he wins the professional event. Good for him. The Pro-Am event ended on Sunday. So the PGA Tour and the folks who run this tournament, the clam bake, the Pro-Am portion, they decided because of the weather delays that forced them into a guaranteed Monday finish that they would end the Pro-Am portion of the event after 54 holes, which normally would be a Saturday spilled into Sunday. And what typically happens is you have the top 25 teams exactly with no ties, exactly 25 teams. There are tiebreakers, multiple ones in place to get to those 25 teams. Those 25 teams all play at Pebble Beach in the final round, which would normally be Sunday, went from Sunday into Monday. And they decided they would just end it after 54 holes this year. That way, every team got one round on each of the courses. Total score after 54 holes was the winner. And that winning team turned out to be Green Bay Packers quarterback and future NFL Hall of Famer Aaron Rodgers and his partner, Canadian Ben Silverman. Now, they won by a shot at 26 under through 3 rounds, which is a pretty fair number. I kind of typically win this tournament in the 33, 35 under par range. So they weren't really that far off from what you might see most years as a winning score, at least through 54 holes. But there's been a lot of blowback coming Aaron Rodgers' way because he was getting 10 strokes in each and every round during the Pro-Am competition. And if you look at how Aaron Rodgers performed as part of the team, along with Ben Silverman, who is his pro, that generated a whole lot of chatter, and I tweeted a little bit about it. There seems to be a little discrepancy, and I don't mean like a gaping discrepancy. I mean enough to make a difference discrepancy between Aaron Rodgers' handicap index and how many strokes he got in the tournament. So, he got 10 strokes, but his handicap index is 3.0, assuming that the Aaron Rodgers that plays at a Green Bay golf club in Green Bay, Wisconsin, is the one and the same. And if it's not, this is a tremendous misunderstanding. But either way, I'm pretty certain they've mentioned all this stuff during the telecast. So, Rodgers is a 3.0 index. That doesn't mean he's a 3 handicap. There's a great misunderstanding about that among people who don't carry handicaps, even people who do. Being a 3 does not mean you get 3 strokes. Being a 3 means that's your handicap index, and then you spit that out or put that as an input into the course handicap computer an algorithm, a math equation, that the USGA and the global handicap system, the world handicap system, do together. And then they tell you, hey, based on the course you're playing and the tees that you're playing, here's how many strokes that you would get. And so Pebble Beach, just taking this for example, not saying that this is universally true on the other two courses, just using Pebble as an example, if you put Aaron Rodgers' handicap index, 3.0, into the course handicap equation, and then you picked the one-up tee box, so not from the tees that the pros would be playing, but one up from there, he would get 5 handicap strokes because the course rating and slope impact how many strokes that you get. It's not just your index. So it's a little bit more difficult for the average golfer from that distance. So you tack on some strokes. So he would get 5 strokes. If he played 2 up, he would get his handicap, 3 strokes. So that's just to give you a sense of what he would get if he were playing on his own, just going out to Pebble Beach and decided to play the box and had a Nassau with some buddies he was playing with that day. So he's getting 10 strokes in this competition. Now, he gets those 10 strokes in part because that's allocated to him by this tournament committee that runs the Pro-Am. And they have some things in place that kind of allow players to keep their handicap from 1 year to the next. So there's an idea that if you miss the cut or something like that, you can maintain your handicap from 1 year to the next. That's kind of something that Larry Fitzgerald did really well when he won twice. He managed to keep his handicap, and now he's a much lower handicap player because he's a two-time winner. It is much more difficult to win because he had what was probably an improper allocation of strokes that he took advantage of, and that's all won or lost in the negotiation, or all won or lost in this case with the tournament committee. So if you look at what Rodgers would have gotten, the 5 strokes he would get from the one-up box or the 3 he would get from a 2-up box, let's just take the 5. And then let's just tack on 2 more because it's a tournament setting. Everyone plays worse in a tournament. Everyone knows that. Most people do. I mean, unless you're a professional golfer. But even they play better when they're just having fun and nothing's on the line. So add a couple of strokes to that 5 because, well, you know, it's a tournament. It's difficult. There's a lot of people watching. Yeah, a lot of people are used to watching him play football but not necessarily play golf. So, okay. 7, maybe 8. Now, you might be saying, well, Ryan, that's like 2 or 3 strokes. What's the difference? It doesn't mean a whole lot. Well, it does mean something when you won by 1 shot, and if you think about it over the course of 3 rounds, that's 2 or 3 kind of gifted strokes that Aaron Rodgers is getting for his team. If you pull off 2 of those doing well, you make pars, those are net birdies. You make birdies, they're net eagles. If you do that, then all of a sudden, that's the difference between winning and losing the Pro-Am portion of the tournament. And by the way, the Pro-Am has a purse, which means Ben Silverman made money because of Aaron Rodgers and his work together. Now, Silverman contributed to the team. Yes, he shot 1 over par and missed the cut through 54 holes. But he made 13 birdies in 54 holes, which means he contributed on a good number of them. Now, of course, if Rodgers makes par or better on any of the 10 hardest holes on each of those courses, he's getting a net birdie, and if he, again, makes birdie, gets a net eagle. So we don't know exactly the makeup of the contribution of holes and which scores counted for every guy because it's the net best ball of the teammates. Still, it wasn't like this was a one-man show. Silverman performed. He did pretty well for a guy that shot 1 over and missed the cut. In terms of birdies and contributions to a Pro-Am team, that's pretty strong to make 13 birdies and shoot 1 over par, especially given the wind conditions that they had and the difficulty playing in the weather they did over the 3 days. That's going to happen. You're going to make a lot of, you're going to have a roller coaster ride of a week. And so Silverman did his part. Rodgers was probably getting 2, maybe 3 strokes too many. And he also did his part because, again, if they're giving you the strokes, you take advantage of them. So he winds up winning the truncated event along with Ben Silverman. And yesterday, after the play was suspended for Sunday, Keith Mitchell, who is a contender in the professional tournament and a contender in the amateur tournament, teaming up with Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen, he was asked about the Pro-Am side of things, and Keith Mitchell did not hold back, and he said, quote, "I think Josh and I won. Aaron Rodgers doesn't count. His handicap was crap. I haven't looked. I think we were on 18. We might have been up there, but if we finish second to Aaron, I consider us winning the trophy," end quote. So they didn't wind up winning. They didn't wind up coming in second, actually. They wound up finishing in fourth place overall. There were two teams in front of them for second and third. And they would have advanced to the final round had there been one. And who knows what the outcome could have been, right? Then things could have changed. Because then Silverman, who would have missed the cut, would have played just to play with Rodgers, not to play in the pro tournament. Who knows what happens there? Keith Mitchell was trying to win. Didn't wind up winning. Maybe that scenario looks different, too, if he's playing with Josh Allen. There's some what-if components to this. But Keith Mitchell did not hold back and said, pretty much, I think Aaron Rodgers shouldn't have gotten 10 strokes. Now, was he sandbagging it? I don't think that he was, because if you look at the scores that he puts in the GHIM system, G-H-I-M, which is the handicap system for most people in this country that put in their handicap scores, he has a wide variety of them. Like, he's got a low round of 71 that counts, but he's got some rounds in the mid-80s. So it's a little bit of everything. I mean, he's a three, but maybe a three more in name. You know, the achievement of getting some good scores in there has probably brought down his number too far. So, yes, he was getting too many strokes probably against his index. Was he getting too many strokes overall? I would still tell you probably one or two. But nevertheless, that this is something that happens in every pro-am event, every net event that there's ever been. There's always a negotiation about or a griping about the team that wins because they got too many strokes or they shouldn't have done this or what have you. I mean, if you've ever played in anything with strokes, you know that to be true. So that's going to be controversial, but it's not like it was Aaron Rodgers getting 10 strokes and he should have been a plus one or something like that. It wasn't that egregious. It was probably anywhere from 1 to 3 strokes too much per round, depending on what you think. Now, again, 1-stroke win, that means something, but it'll at least keep things fresh and lively between Aaron Rodgers and Josh Allen, maybe. And that's the content that we need. So we got it here, and that's great. Second story today is a bizarre one, frankly. It goes back to last week, really over the weekend, and it has really to do with a bunch of rocks at the end of the day. The Swilkin Bridge is the bridge that takes you from the 18th tee, 17th green, 18th tee complex area, which are right near one another, at the old course. And then you go over the burn, and then you walk the rest of the hole, right? You go down 18th fairway, share with one, Valley of Sin, very cool setting. Everybody has been over it. You go over it when you play the old course. Everybody who's ever played golf at the highest level has been photographed going over that bridge, waving at people, getting lauded for it. Tiger Woods was the most recent to do it at the Open Championship. Jack, Arnie, Tom Watson, Savvy. I mean, you name it, they've done it. And it's a historic moment. But so do tens of thousands of people every year who play the old course. And that's a high traffic area. And it's an area, obviously, that's close to some water. It's on Lynx land. So it's probably not the most lush piece of turf that there is. And it gets worn down by people walking over it. And not only do the people who play walk over it, you can have caddies walking over it. You can have the public park that it turns into on Sundays with people walking over it. You can have family and friends who are there to take pictures walking over it. High traffic area, turns to mud. And the St. Andrews Lynx Trust, which operates the old course and the other courses at St. Andrews, decided they wanted to come up with a solution that would look prettier, but still look like it belonged, so that the Swilkin Bridge wouldn't have kind of this grooved mud area, mud dirt area, that may not be as attractive looking, but would still be genuine. And so what they came up with was effectively circular patio type looking things on each side of the bridge. So you walked to this circular landing area, and then you walked over the bridge, and then you went onto the other circular landing area, and then you kept on. And they did this to try to create a space where there would be so much foot traffic that the stones would take care of it, and that it being a circular pattern, you could come in from different angles, I guess, straight on, left, right, whatever, and exit that way. Again, trying to limit the amount of turf management and upkeep you would have to do to that area, because in the past, you would either have to put turf down or sod down on a regular basis just to keep it maintained. You might have to put down stones. They've tried artificial turf, they've said. But anyway, they didn't tell anybody they were doing this. They just did it. And then all of a sudden it hit golf Twitter and golf social media, and people lost it because one of the best landmarks in the history of golf had been changed. I mean, that's just kind of how it works. I mean, put a mustache on the Mona Lisa and see what happens. That's this kind of thing. So, especially the people who are in charge of taking care of it. There was a very strong reaction to it. It was a Saturday morning that this came out, I think. And people lost their minds. And it really isn't that horrible. And if you looked at it from, you backed out of it, and you kind of looked at it from a side angle, then it wasn't so bad, right? But the damage had been done. People had noticed. There had been a strong visceral reaction. And at that point, the St. Andrew's Lynx Trust had to say something, I guess. So they issued like a 350-word statement or something like that on social media, explaining what they were doing and why they were doing it, basically saying, hey, we did this and we're going to keep it and get used to it. And frankly, that would have been fine. They could have kept it. People would have just cropped out the circle part, the circle patio part, if they didn't want that part of their picture. Life would have moved on, right? I mean, it's just, it is what it is. And I understand the intentions behind it. But so many people saw it as a defacing of such a long-standing monument in golf that all of a sudden it became an untenable situation. And so this afternoon, as the Pebble Beach Pro-Am was finishing, we got this statement from the folks of the St. Andrew's Lynx Trust, basically explaining they're going to take away all the stones and we're really sorry about all this. So let me read to you just a little bit of it and put a bow on all of this drama. So, quote, the exploratory works around the approach to and from the Swilkin Bridge have been undertaken as part of ongoing attempts to mitigate the issue of significant wear and tear to the turf. In recent years, we have identified and trialed a number of solutions with the primary ambition always to find something that is both adequate for the amount of foot traffic for such a popular location whilst being in keeping with its surroundings. The stonework at the approach and exit of the bridge was identified as one possible long-term solution. However, while this installation would have provided some protection, in this instance, we believe we are unable to create a look which is in keeping with its iconic setting and have taken the decision to remove it. We have also taken on feedback from many partners and stakeholders, as well as the golfing public, and we would like to thank everyone who has been in touch for their contribution to the issue. The widespread attention and commentary is indicative of the regard in which St. Andrew's is held around the world, and we are conscious of our role in preserving this heritage while recognizing its hallowed grounds have continued to evolve to meet demands for more than 600 years. In the coming days, our team will be reinstating the area with turf. We would like to thank golfers for their patience as we continue this work. In the meantime, we will continue to explore alternative options for a permanent solution and will work with all relevant partners, including Fife Council and key stakeholders. That's where the statement ends. This is unbelievable. This is all about like 100 stones, 200 stones. I don't know how many there were. It's all about just some stones. And yes, I understand the Swilkin Bridge is extremely important. It's a great landmark. But it's not like they were doing this to try to destroy it, right? They were doing it to try to preserve that area and not potentially create some issue that could create damage to the Swilkin Bridge in the long term. Should that solution have been different? In my opinion, yes. Am I an agronomist? No. So, you know, my input as a stakeholder in golf, and yours is the same. I mean, you're someone who might go play the Old Course someday. I guess it's relevant, but it's not like they just did this like, hey, let's put some stone patios out there and not tell anybody. And we'll really tick everyone off. That wasn't the point of this at all. It's just kind of how it wound up working out. So hopefully the removal of this will kind of settle the issue. They're going to put turf back in there. They may be able to come up with some kind of drainage solution that's unique. That might tick some people off too. But that's probably the path that this is going to go. And maybe they'll come up with another quote-unquote permanent solution that everyone doesn't like. But at this point, they've kind of broached the subject that, hey, if we want this Swilkin Bridge to be as amazing as it's always been, we don't want it to look crummy at the turf level as you get on and get off the bridge. So what that looks like, really don't know, but I'm sure they're probably keen on trying to find some answer that's not just put dirt in there and put turf on it every X number of months or years or whatever, because that's the way it's going to work because it's a high traffic area. So if nothing else, this has been an exercise in how worked up golfers can get over just the smallest things that change. And it has been pretty funny to see the whole episode. And there were some great tweets about it, trying to compare the Swilkin Bridge stone patios to if they had just decided to put stone patios in front of the 18th tee or along the wall area on the 18th hole at Pebble Beach and how much better that could be and all this stuff. And it may be a little bit over top in the way of reaction, but come on, it's kind of funny. You got to enjoy that. All right, so we got a big week in golf ahead. We have the Waste Management Phoenix Open. We have 38 of the world top 50 competing this week for a $20 million purse at TPC Scottsdale. A great appetizer for the Super Bowl. It's going to be one of the best tournaments of the year. It's the first full field designated tournament. The Monday qualifier is today. It's ongoing right now. Three spots instead of the traditional four for entry into a $20 million tournament, which is arguably the most high-stakes Monday qualifier in the history of the PGA Tour. We'll find out who wins later on today. Then they're in part of the field, which has been expanded from 132 players to include all of the eligible FedEx 125 from last year to be able to play in this tournament. It's going to be a great week. Lots to talk about. We'll have plenty to do on the show with the Phoenix Open over the course of the next few days. Hope you'll join us for all of it. And I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you do listen to us through a podcasting service, please give us a 5-star review. Helps us reach more people. If you listen or watch on YouTube, would you consider subscribing and smashing that like button? Also helps us reach more people, and we appreciate that. And if you're just watching or listening somewhere else, hey, thanks for doing that. We love you for doing that too. We're available on GNN Radio 24/7 at golfnewsnet.com through iHeart and TuneIn. All right, we're going to talk to you tomorrow. We'll get ready for Phoenix, start all the fun there at the greatest show on turf, and we will talk to you then. Have a great day, everybody.